Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, everyone, and thank you for joining us for another night at the Wise Women Media Radio Show. And tonight is an open mic check. So, if anybody out there is listening and needs a platform on which to discuss anything that you're working on, an initiative, you want to promote an event or whatever, feel free to call us. The call-in number is 213-816-0357, and you can join us in the chat room if you don't want to get on the phone. The archive to this show will be available after this show's live broadcast, and you'll be able to access it then and forward it to anybody that you would like to forward it to. So we have several different newsworthy items and some music to play tonight. I'm going to start us out with Florence and the Machine, Cosmic Love. And that was Florence and the Machine, and the song was Cosmic Love. I wanted to remind you all that you can see us online at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, and I wanted to give a shout-out to our sponsors, Daughters of Isis, Florida Nature Photos, Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio, Power New Media and Public Relations, Roundtree 7, Tarot and Stars, and the Hoodoo Blog. Those are our sponsors, and we also want to give kudos to the Common Projects Network, which blogs are Here Be Monsters is broadcasting under at this time. So it is one project consisting of many media initiatives. And you can see more at Here Be Monsters on Blog Talk Radio. We have several different shows that go on during the week, and so many that I can't name them all, but if you look up Here Be Monsters, they'll be listed right under that heading. And also on wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com, you will see our GoFundMe link. So independent media always needs to be funded by you all, the listeners. We don't have any corporate sponsors to help us produce and put together these shows every week. So dig deep. You know, any little amount will do, $5, $10, whatever you can afford. Just hit up GoFundMe, the link, which is on the right-hand side of the page and about halfway down, and contribute to keep us going every week. This was really a week of some really amazing super women. I can't explain it any other way. I think the one that really just completely amazed me was the senator from Texas, Wendy Davis, who really was a real heroine and got up and did. She planned on doing a 13-hour filibuster. Instead, it was 11 hours to stop the SB5, which was a bill that would have taken out pretty much all of the abortion clinics throughout the state of Texas. And the procedure would have only been allowed or permitted to take place in surgery centers. Senator Davis knew exactly what she was doing and how she was going to try to stop the voting on the bill. The filibuster began, I would assume from the timeline I was given, about 1 p.m. in the afternoon and was supposed to continue all the way until midnight that night. And the laws in Texas are extremely strict, so no water, no going off topic, not able to lean on the podium. And it was an extremely strict, very guidelined 11 hours for her. And I have some footage and audio from the Young Turks, the ladies from the Young Turks, who explained this perfectly. So I'm going to go ahead and roll that now.
The House in Texas had passed one of the most strict abortion bills in the country. It would ban abortion after 20 weeks, and it would require all abortion clinics to get admitting privileges from hospitals. And as you know, it's very difficult for clinics to do that because of the fact that a lot of hospitals don't want to get, you know, protested, and they also have their own religious issues, and they don't want to deal with abortion at all. Now, the bill passed the House, and it made its way to the Senate. And Senate Democrats in Texas said that they were not going to let it pass. In fact, State Senator Wendy Davis said that she was willing to do a 13-hour filibuster just to make sure that she could block the vote. Now, we have an ABC News report that has more detail into this story. Let's take a look.
Members, I'm rising on the floor today to humbly give voice to thousands of Texans.
With no food, no water, and no bathroom breaks allowed, Davis hoped to run out the clock on the legislative session and so block a bill that would close virtually every abortion clinic in Texas. But to engineer the filibuster, she also couldn't change the subject, and her Republican opponents say she did just that just before the midnight deadline, igniting chaos as hundreds of her supporters protested, shouting her name. lawmakers then scrambled to vote in time, approving the bill. But then this morning, a stunner. The lieutenant governor confirming that the timing of that vote was changed in the computer. The vote was actually taken after midnight.
Now, the filibuster took place for 11 hours, which is incredible. And throughout those 11 hours, as you heard in that report, no bathroom breaks, no food. She wasn't allowed to lean on anything. And the way the filibuster works in Texas is there's a three-strike policy. So if you do something that's out of bounds, people will or your colleagues can call something known as a point of order.
Right.
And on one occasion, they called a point of order because she was talking about ultrasounds, and the bill has absolutely nothing to do with ultrasounds, so they said, no, you're changing the subject, point of order. She also got another point of order when a colleague of hers came to help her with her back brace because her back was really bothering her. She was standing there for 11 hours.
Exactly.
So they managed to call off the filibuster, and there was about 12 minutes left.
Yeah.
And this is where the protesters came in, and it was incredible because Republicans are scrambling and they're trying to vote. And in the process of doing so, they're getting distracted by the protesters that are there. And at the end of all of this, they managed to finish voting, but they finished voting at 12:03 a.m., which meant that they did not meet the deadline.
Wah, wah.
Sorry.
Sorry. And you know what Wendy should have done? As someone who used to work in retail and stand on my feet on an Italian marble floor all day, she should have tweeted before the filibuster, hey, what ideas do you have for people who stand in service jobs all day? And she would have gotten it. Someone would have made her an exoskeleton, I'm sure, at that point.
Mm-hmm.
But the back brace, little pink tennis shoes, I mean, she did what she could. I assume she was wearing some sort of a Stadium Pal or Depends or something.
Oh.
And I just
wow.
I want to be her when I grow up so bad. I love her. I think she's unbelievable.
Unbelievable and very inspirational. And also it shows me that there's hope in a deeply conservative state like Texas. You have a woman who is fighting for something. And by the way, because of redistricting and because of the Supreme Court gutting the Voter Rights Act of 1965, it's very likely that in Texas they will redistrict her area. They'll split it up, and it will be even more difficult for her to get reelected. So I'm really worried about that. But for today, let's focus on the good news.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So I love this is an example of democracy working in the right way, and I want to remain optimistic. However, Governor Rick Perry is so obsessed with the issue of abortion because there's nothing else to govern on.
Right.
You've got to worry about abortion.
Yeah.
He has decided to call a special session, which will take place on July 1st at 2 p.m. So they're still fighting. They're trying to get this legislation passed, and they're trying to make this law. And who knows what will happen during that special session, but I do feel better knowing that we have a state senator like Wendy Davis fighting
Absolutely.
For what's right.
Absolutely.
By the way, final quote from Wendy Davis that I liked. She said, my back hurts. I don't have a lot of words left. It shows the determination and spirit of Texas women. Get it, girl.
Amen.
I love it. I love it. Feels really good to know that there's someone fighting for women's rights in Texas.
So there you have it. It was an absolutely amazing story this week, and Senator Wendy Davis is probably cinched herself into any other seat that she wants to run for, because women are definitely going to be supporting her because she supports women and she didn't wimp out. And as far as people, this the people of Texas, this really gives us something to see in the realm, as they said, the girls from the Young Turks, they said, this is democracy at work, it's democracy in action. But it also shows you that all the people that were in the mezzanine that were watching this go down, that were definitely for what Senator Davis was doing, that what they were doing on the floor was not the will of the people. And towards that last 10 or 11 minutes, when supposedly she had been disqualified, she, Senator Davis, supposedly had violated one of the rules, the people in the mezzanine were so loud, and that's why the voting was conducted late. They were, the people on the floor were distracted, and they were so loud they were drowning out any other noise in that room. So I'm going to play about 30 seconds of that, 45 seconds of that, so you can get an idea on exactly how loud that was. One moment. A huge din like that for about, I would say, 10 to 11 minutes until that midnight time frame had been approached, and it was too late to vote, even though the floor did vote. As the girls from Young Turks said, they were 3 minutes too late. So quite amazing superwomen from, I mean, just amazing that this was done, and Senator Davis is a heroine in my book. Another person that's not been getting covered too much is Diane Wilson, who has begun a hunger strike for the release of the Guantanamo prisoners. She has been in front of the White House. She was arrested 2 days ago, but four days ago, my friend Dennis Traynor did an interview with Diane Wilson. I'm going to play the audio feed from that. People need to know that this is happening, that people are actually standing up for these Guantanamo prisoners. They're not being charged with a crime. Why are they continuing to hold them as prisoners?
Thank you for watching Acronym TV. I'm your host, Dennis Traynor Jr., and Diane Wilson, co-founder of Code Pink, fourth-generation shrimper from the Gulf of Texas, has been on a hunger strike since May 1st in solidarity with hunger strikers in Guantanamo Bay. And Diane joins me from Washington, D.C. Diane, thank you very much for joining me.
Oh, you bet. I'm glad to be here.
Now, tell us, first of all, the motivations for selecting a hunger strike as a tactic to draw attention to the plight of prisoners in Guantanamo Bay.
Well, there's a couple of reasons. One, I've been a shrimper on the Gulf Coast, and because of the bays, I've been an environmental activist for 25 years. So I have found out when all recourse is gone, when nothing you do brings attention, when you have no voice, I have found out that you think outside the box.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what I started using, and the first thing that popped in my head was a hunger strike, and it was just instinct. I hadn't read anything on it. I didn't know anything about it. So I just, on my own, without any training or any information, I started doing hunger strikes just to bring attention and try to get the demands of the fishermen met, and I found they were unbelievably successful.
What is the longest hunger strike? So you've done multiple hunger strikes in your activist career, and what is the longest hunger strike that you have participated in?
45 days.
So the current hunger strike you're on now is eclipsed by far
it's the longest. But
I know you didn't do this to draw attention to yourself, but I have to ask. I know that you've lost a lot of weight. 50-odd days is a long time to be without food. How are you physically, and what precautions? This is an open-ended hunger strike. What are your plans?
Believe it or not, I am widely known for not having a plan. I'm one of those activists that, and I guess it's because I come from, I've been a fisherman my whole life. It's instinct. It's comes from the heart, and I just move that way, and many times without a plan at all. And on this one, I am, it's open-ended. I have no idea how I'm going to end it, quite frankly. But I do know those men are still on a hunger strike. Matter of fact, I think the latest report from The Guardian was that the administration is cracking down on them. They're trying to crush the hunger strike over there. They're making their cells, solitary confinement, freezing. And that gets unbearable because I've been in jail before on my civil disobedience. It's unbearable, the cold, especially when you're on a hunger strike, and even to be in a cell, to have freezing cold, it's a form of torture as far as I'm concerned, and they're still force feeding them. And I talked to a man last night who was witness for torture, and he's been talking with the people with constitutional rights, and they said they fear there is a couple of men right on the verge of death. And they say
that the United Nations has called the force feeding itself torture, on top of the other elements of torture that they're enduring in Guantanamo Bay. But to get back to you then, as far as this is the longest hunger strike you've personally been on, are you coordinating with medical care for yourself?
I'm coordinating with probably like 45 different people. And we have conference calls every week. There's actually probably at this point over 8 people that are on a hunger strike. I just happen to be the longest since I started May 1st, and they are and I even have another conference call with the other long-term hunger fasters. I think Elliot Adams, Veterans for Peace, he's on, I believe, about day 35, and there's some following up behind us. There's ones right behind me. But it's open-ended. I really can't say what will end it.
And this Wednesday, you'll be back in front of the White House, where you've been many days of your hunger strike, including at least one day that I know of where you were arrested after chaining yourself to the fence of the White House. The effectiveness and the momentum behind this seems to be growing. It's been a month now since Obama made his famous speech, even more famously perhaps interrupted by Medea Benjamin, where he promised to start the process of releasing prisoners from Guantanamo Bay. Is there something that the president can do that would end your hunger strike?
Yeah, it's been. We had a press conference way back before I did that action where I chained myself, and there were people that were in the administration. There were former prosecutors of the Guantanamo prisoners. There were attorneys. And every single one of them said Obama can sign the waiver today. He can release those men. It's just politically not the most favorable thing for him. So I just think he is avoiding at all costs, putting pointing the finger at other people who should be doing things. But he can do it, and that's why I am in front of the White House, because that man can do it.
Well, Diane, you may not have a plan, but your conviction is inspirational. I want to thank you very much, and thank you for joining me today on Acronym TV.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it.
And there you have it from Dennis Traynor and Diane Wilson, who is one of the co-founders of Code Pink. And just 2 days ago, an article came out in the Huffington Post, the D.C. section, Diane Wilson arrested after jumping White House fence. The article reads, from Washington, the Secret Service says a woman is under arrest and in the custody of District of Columbia police after jumping over the White House fence on Wednesday. A Secret Service spokesperson identified the woman who wore an orange jumpsuit as Diane Wilson. She was charged with unlawful entry and handed over to local authorities. No hometown was given for Wilson, but she is from Texas, we know that. She appeared to be among a group of 17 similarly attired demonstrators who had chained themselves to the fence on the northwest side of the White House. They were protesting the detention of terrorist suspects at the U.S. prison in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. President Barack Obama was not in the White House at the time. He has said he is redoubling his efforts to close the Guantanamo facility. So that's where we're at in regards to Guantanamo, and it doesn't, you know, one minute we hear verbiage that it's going to be done, and then, you know, the main issue is, why isn't it getting done? I mean, these were one of the promises that President Obama made before he even became elected. So this is something where activists really need to hold his feet to the fire. We have another interview that was also done by Dennis Traynor, and this was with Medea Benjamin of Code Pink. And she, the interview was conducted after she returned from Yemen. So I'm going to go ahead and roll that audio.
Coming right up, an interview with Medea Benjamin, who has just returned from Yemen, where she led a Code Pink delegation that traveled there to meet with survivors of U.S. drone strikes and families with loved ones in Guantanamo Bay and the lawyers representing them. It has been 1 month since Medea Benjamin interrupted President Obama's historic speech on national security, in which the president claimed to want to close Guantanamo Bay prison, where 86 prisoners cleared for release in 2010 are still being held and where 130 detainees are on hunger strike now, 43 of them being force-fed. The force-feeding alone is a violation of international law and tantamount to torture, according to the United Nations Human Rights Office. And while Obama claims impotence while holding the most powerful office in the world to closing down a prison, he doesn't actually want to end the system of indefinite detention. He just wants to move the prisoners to a prison in Illinois because, well,
no person has ever escaped one of our supermax or military prisons here in the United States, ever. Our courts have convicted hundreds of people for terrorism or terrorism-related offenses, including some folks who are more dangerous than most Gitmo detainees.
Yeah, the playground bully at Sidwell Friends is more dangerous than most Gitmo prisoners, Mr. President, because most Gitmo prisoners are there because American cowboys descended on deserts waving money around for people to turn over terrorists, enough money, in fact, that locals soon found out they can turn over just about anyone, claim they were Al-Qaeda, and collect more money than they had ever seen in their lives. Those are the types of unlucky people who have been in Guantanamo Bay prison for over a decade. To top off his speech, President Obama told the American people that assassination is legal. And even if Eric Holder rolls out his Orwellian legal guide to tell us that targeting Americans for assassination without judicial process is not the same as violating the Fifth Amendment that reads that no person shall be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law, the assassination of citizens in countries that have not declared war on us and who pose no threat to us using drone warfare has become the Obama doctrine, a version of the preemptive you're either with us or you're against us push doctrine that creates enemies rather than keeping the United States safer. Speaking truth to power during that speech, you will remember, was Medea Benjamin.
Richard Reed, the shoe bomber, is, as we speak, serving a life sentence in a maximum security prison here in the United States. In sentencing Reed, Judge William Young told him, "The way we treat you is the measure of our own liberty." We went on.
And you tell the Muslim people their lives are as precious as our lives. Can you take the drones out of the hands of the CIA? Can you stop the signature strikes that are killing people on the basis of suspicious activities?
We're addressing
that. Apologize to the thousands of Muslims that you have killed. Will you compensate the innocent family victims? That will make us safer here at home. I love my country. I love the law.
think that the, and I'm going off script as you might expect here. The voice of that woman is worth paying attention to.
That woman, Medea Benjamin, joins me right now from Washington, D.C. Medea, thank you very much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me on, Dennis.
So, Medea, it's been about a month since you interrupted President Barack Obama and his speech on foreign policy, specifically surrounding the issues of drone strikes, drone surveillance, and Guantanamo Bay. What progress, if any, have you seen from the executive branch of our government on those issues?
President Obama said that he was going to make more judicious use of the drone strikes. Yet we see in the last month there have been three in Pakistan and Yemen. In Yemen, one of them killed a 10-year-old boy. In the case of Pakistan, it was much ballyhooed that they caught the number two of al-Qaeda, but that only means the number three became the number two, and sources in Pakistan say that the new number two guy is more hardline than the other one, who is more open to negotiations. So we don't see a change in policy yet, although the international pressure seems to be mounting. In Pakistan, the newly elected leader is very strongly against drones, called in the U.S. Chargé d'Affaires, Richard Hoagland, and said, you better stop doing this. And where I just came from, there is mounting pressure on the president of Yemen to go against the drone strike.
Now, talk about that. You just led a delegation, a Code Pink delegation, to Yemen. Yemen leads, I think, statistically, the most people who are currently in Guantanamo Bay who should be released back to Yemen. What did you hear from the people inside that country?
Well, Yemen is also the place where there have been growing number of drone strikes. So the drones and Guantanamo, people just felt that the U.S. is focused on this singular issue of al-Qaeda and ignoring all the other issues that are so important to the people of Yemen, and that in terms of Guantanamo, it seems like a great affront to the entire country that the U.S. is returning people to all sorts of other places that are quite unstable, or has been before 2012, but had put a ban on returning people to Yemen. Now, the president did lift that ban in his speech a month ago, but no people have been returned, nor do they have any sense that they will be returned in the near future. So we met with about a dozen different families with loved ones in Guantanamo, a 13-year-old girl who had never seen her father, mothers who hadn't seen their sons since they were 17 years old, people who the last time they had a chance through the Red Cross to speak to their loved one, turns out that they had been on a hunger strike for so long that they could barely talk. So the families are very desperate. The government is very upset about it, and this is creating a lot of animosity towards the United States.
Are the families upset, and is the population upset to the point where they can exert any political will on the rulers in Yemen to force a dialogue at least, or to expedite the release of those prisoners in Guantanamo Bay?
Well, the problem is that the government of Yemen feels that it is very weak and has very little ability to pressure the United States effectively. We met with the human rights minister, who complained about how she came to the United States less than a month ago trying to sign a memorandum of understanding for the release of those Yemenis and was unable to get any high-level meeting in the White House. The U.S. now says that Yemen has to build a rehabilitation center for the returning Yemenis. The Yemenis feel that this is something that the U.S. should pay for, but the U.S. has not allocated any funds for it. I mean, the whole thing is so crazy, Dennis. We're holding 56 people who have been cleared for release now for years, meaning they are absolutely no threat to the United States, and yet refuses to return them, starts placing new conditions on the government of Yemen, and then won't even pay for that.
There's growing awareness here in the United States about the conditions in Guantanamo Bay by actions taken by people like you interrupting President Obama, but also another Code Pink co-founder, Diane Wilson, has been on a hunger strike. I've lost count of the days now, but I think it's over 6 or 7 weeks. You can probably update me on that. And then there, Diane and Elliot Adams, who's also on a hunger strike, will be participating, I believe, in some nonviolent civil resistance this Wednesday, June 26th in front of the White House. Tell us about that action and perhaps an update on Diane Wilson's status.
Yes, Diane Wilson has been on a hunger strike since May 1st,
mm-hmm.
And Elliot Adams since May 17th. Now, that's a very, very long time, and they are committed to coming to Washington, D.C., and doing action here on Wednesday, along with other Veterans for Peace, Code Pink, Witness Against Torture, a number of other groups. And we are anticipating that it will be both a very profound action of commemorating those hunger strikers in Guantanamo, recognizing the sacrifice of the long-term hunger strikers here in the United States, and then there will be a civil disobedience action as well. This is all part of the effort to step up the pressure on the Obama administration. One thing the Obama administration did was to appoint a new envoy in the State Department for releasing these detainees. We're already putting the pressure on him, Clifford Sloan, before he even starts in the position. So more people are getting involved and active, and I hope our pressure will be successful.
And finally, I know that you're doing a book tour this summer to promote your book, Drone Warfare, Killing by Remote Control. Given the prevalence of drones and the increased use of them, both for fighting wars and for surveillance here at home, we now know that there's going to be, by 2015, I believe, domestic surveillance programs using drones in all over the United States. Is there a follow-up to this book that you anticipate needs to be written?
I just did an update that came out recently, so the new edition does talk more about the domestic use of drones and encourages more people to link those two issues between the killing overseas and the spying here at home. And that's what this tour will be about, and we have more information on our website, Dennis, for anybody interested, and I and my other colleagues would be happy to come to communities to speak about this. It's on codepink.org as well as droneswatch.org.
Badia Benjamin, it's always a pleasure to talk to you. Thanks for joining me.
Okay, thanks so much for having me on, Dennis. Bye-bye.
Support this show by sharing this on your social networks and Twitter, and subscribing at Acronym TV on YouTube. Peace.
So that was an update by Dennis Traynor with Acronym TV, a friend of mine, actually. He and I worked on the Kucinich 2008 presidential campaign together, and Medea Benjamin, the head of Code Pink, and she was, I recognized that she was talking from the Code Pink House in Washington, D.C., so which I have visited a couple of times. So an interesting interview that was done on the 24th earlier this week about Yemen and just the politics surrounding and the direct actions surrounding Diane Wilson and other people, Veterans for Peace. The resistance is certainly not dead. It's very much alive. I also got some interesting information. A video happened to cross my path just before I did this show or started the show. I listened to it and I figured, well, I think I'll play the video on this. And then I did want to talk about an upcoming event Sunday night, which will be taking place in Naples, Florida, for the no fracking effort there. But I will play this very short audio from this video, and the question on this one is it truly safe to swim in the Gulf of Mexico and Florida? And after you listen to this, my question to you will be, what do you think?
I'm Dot Schwartz, I'm the father of Dave Schwartz, and on Memorial Weekend of this year was the first time that we had gotten into Gulf of Mexico since in 3 years. Since the 1990s. Anyway, we got in the Gulf, we were playing around, fully immersed, body surfing, head under the water, all that. And that night, we both woke up with our throats, like razor blades in our throats.
Almost like an anaphylactic, where your throat wants to close.
Sinus, ear problems, pressure in the sinuses,
The really funny thing was is that we'd been around no one who had been sick. I had never had sinus problems. I'd never had an earache. I rarely in my whole life ever got a sore throat. So I found it pretty coincidental that we got into the Gulf and then became sick.
Actually, to me, what was coincidental at the time was that we both felt exactly the same thing at pretty much the same time. So we figured, you know, what did we do that was in common? That was the one thing that we hadn't done in ages. And the thing is the day seemed, the water, it looked beautiful. I mean, it really looked nice. I didn't see any issues. There was nothing. We saw
wind. There was wind.
Yeah, but there was no, I mean, you know, the water seemed nice. And there was nothing that smelled particularly like anything. And still, by the time we got home,
I woke up, we woke up in the night.
Right.
In the middle of the night.
That last came out suddenly and simultaneously.
We were sick for 2 weeks.
And did you take anything to?
We took Advil, a lot of Advil. I took some Chinese herbs. Dave took Chinese herbs, Advil, and gargled with warm salt water vinegar.
And have you had any problems since?
Actually, I have a little something right here now, and it's been off and on since then, but it's not as bad as it was then.
Is there anything else you'd like to say?
Oh, there's plenty, but
I wish there was more testing of the gold.
That's for the big meetings. Well, yeah, they've got plenty of it they need more, but
I wish that there was some double blind study so that the people who want to show that there's a problem are not swayed subconsciously that it affects the study, and the people who do not want, like BP, I wish that there was a double-blind study, that they didn't know what they were testing, they didn't have any preconceived ideas, so that it was a very accurate study. What I wish.
So that was compiled from an interview with David and Dot Schwartz of Pensacola, Florida. And the description of that little interview was, after swimming in the Gulf of Mexico this past Memorial Day weekend, both David and Dot woke up in the middle of the night with throats that felt like razor blades cutting inside, as well as sinus headaches and earaches. This is a couple who have gone from riches to practically living in seclusion by modern standards. They have a quarter acre, a 100% organic garden, as well as chickens and a rooster or two, which was great because you could hear the rooster in the interview. They are genuine people who share the fruits of their labor with others in their community. If you want to swim in the Gulf, that's fine. Some do without any problems, but others do not. And some argue that it depends on whether the winds blow in from the south or the southwest. Because, like it or not, there are still oil spills in the Gulf of Mexico, and the EPA is not regulating what type of oil dispersant is used, many which are toxic and produced by the oil cartel themselves. So we know that, and we also know that those are continually being sprayed in the water. If you look up the video on YouTube, you're going to be looking up, is it truly safe to swim in the Gulf of Mexico in Florida? At the bottom of the description of the video, it says you can help by signing a petition to ban toxic oil dispersants at www.ipetitions.com/petitions/ban-toxic-dispersants. So you will see that URL there at the bottom of the description. Please sign that to help the people of the Gulf of Mexico region. The event that's coming up, the No Fracking event, you can find information about this event on Facebook, also on the website PreserveOurParadise, all one word, .org. Go under the action heading and it'll say upcoming events. So once you get to that, Sunday, June 30th at 7 p.m., vigil on the eve of the deadline for public comments on oil drilling in Golden Gate Estates. This is outside of Naples, Florida. Preserve Our Paradise invites the community to a candlelight vigil on the beach next to the pier on the eve of the deadline for public comments on oil drilling in Golden Gate. Bring cell phones and set them to candle mode. We're calling for an extension of the comment period and denial of the permit based on dangers to residents, water, wetlands, and wildlife. We're asking environmental and social justice groups statewide to hold solidarity events. Overpass light brigades in other Florida cities are confirmed. So you can see more information at preserveourparadise.org, and you can also look up Preserve Our Paradise on Facebook and be sure to like that page. There's an interesting video of an interview that actually crossed by me today, and I thought it was important enough to play this interview for you. And you can see a lot of information from a document. It's a government document, and it was a PowerPoint presentation through NASA. And the actual document is called The Future Is Now. And it was written by a Dennis Bushnell, chief scientist at the NASA Langley Research Center. And this was circa 2025. So this was a PowerPoint. And after researching the PowerPoint, a woman named Deborah Tavares did an interview regarding this document that she went over with a fine-tooth comb. Deborah's spreading the word about this document and what it means, as almost everything around us is going to become weaponized. And I will play the audio feed of this, and please be sure if you have comments to leave the comments underneath the blog post for this show at wisewomenmedia.blogspot.com. So I'm going to go ahead and proceed with that, and I will keep the chat open. So if anybody would like to talk, they can just hit me up on the chat, and I will be sure to interrupt the recording, and we will be able to talk, comment, or ask questions. So here goes. This is critical. Emergency, 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 emergency is the name of the audio feed. Sorry, that's not queued up. There's some words. Here we go. It's starting now.
Anthony J. Hilder. I'm with Deborah Tavares, and we're going to discuss a few topics here.
Thank you so much for the interview. I appreciate the opportunity. One of the things that we want to talk about is what we were discussing a little bit ago, and that is the significance of this NASA war document that was found on the NASA website, and the need to urgently get this out in front of as many people as possible because of the content of this document.
So was this document available to everyone, or this was on their actual website and someone found it?
That is correct. It was on the NASA website, and it was a document that actually is a PowerPoint presentation by Dennis Bushnell, the chief NASA scientist at the Langley Center. And it was presented in 2001, July of 2001, just a few months before 9/11. And what brought my attention to it and immediately rang some uncomfortable realizations was when we first came across it, it says on the website, Future Strategic Issues, Future Warfare, circa 2025. And as I decided to just flip through it quickly to see what it was about, I was a little stunned on page 4. It said, the presentation is based in all cases upon existing data, trends, analysis, technologies, no pixie dust. And the entire premise of the document or the PowerPoint is about robots, cyborgs, and humans. So I immediately saw a conflict between future and now. And I thought, what are they covering up? Because that was a definite cover-up. And then I started to continue looking through the document with shock. And that's why we're talking right now, because I think most people would be shocked to find on page 93.
So who wrote this NASA document, and was this intentional? Did they want the public to see this, do you think? Or?
Well, again, the Illuminati, the most wealthy, rich men on the face of the planet, always telegraph everything that they're going to do. So the fact that it was on the NASA website, it was certainly available to the public, but did they see it? Obviously not. Because had they looked at this document, you would know about it right now. And we don't. And that's the purpose of this discussion, is for people to know about this document. Again, the conflict between the future and the fact that they said it was a current reality in 2001 of July when this was actually presented. And what it said, which was quite shocking, on page 93, it said, capture, torture Americans in living color on prime time. And that is an unbelievable statement. Then it's followed up by saying, terror attacks within the continental United States using binary biologicals take down critical infrastructure. They are going to use an EMP, which is an electromagnetic pulse. They're going to use radiation frequencies against our brains, etc., and conduct serious psy war and collateral damage and exploitation. On the same page 93, they say exploit CNN syndrome. Now, CNN, of course, is the network, the news media network, propaganda machine, and was set up by the CIA. You can watch the movie called Psy War on StopTheCrime.net for all the background information on CNN. Very, very interesting information. Then you go on and you read that on page 66, they say increasingly critical are human limitations and human downsides. Humans are too large. Humans are too heavy, too tender. Humans are too slow, both physically and mentally. And we require huge logistical trains, meaning we cost way too much money to maintain. And humans have rapidly decreasing to negative value. Can you even believe this? I mean, you're hearing this, and it's got to be rather shocking coming off of a NASA website, particularly when some of the agencies that are involved are the U.S. Air Force, DARPA, the CIA, the FBI, Southern Command, Atlantic Command, Australian Department of Defense, and other agencies. This is the corporations' agencies. We are USA Inc. We're no longer under a constitution, as proclaimed in the Iron Mountain Report, which everyone should read. On StopTheCrime.net, you can download it not only as the document, but you can watch the documentary, which I highly recommend. You will see how the stealth and deceptive, incrementally positioned attacks upon the Constitution have rendered us now a corporation, and we no longer have a legitimate government. We are being controlled by corporations and banks that are posing as a legitimate government, and they're not. We wouldn't have a legitimate government with the war machine stating what they were going to do on the continental United States to all the people. And this is not just in the United States. This is a global planned attack and assault with technologies beyond most people's comprehension. Everyone is buying books and ammunition, guns and ammunition, and they don't realize that the beam weapons, for example, on page 45, beam weapons increasingly prevalent. This is how they're going to attack. They talk also about, on page 9, this is very interesting and horrifying. Humans have taken over and vastly shortened evolution. They're going to direct evolution. They believe, the bankers, the global elites, believe that they have accomplished immortality. And they're doing that, again, keeping in mind that this entire document is about robots, cyborgs, and humans. They've already mapped our brains. We've just recently heard that they can transfer a human brain into machinery. So whenever they tell us that this is a new scientific discovery, we know it's been decades and decades prior to us ever finding out about these things. And they also talk about microdust as a weapon. They say that this micron-sized mechanized dust, which is distributed as an aerosol and inhaled into the lungs, the dust mechanically bores into the lung tissue and executes various pathological missions. They say it's a completely new type of warfare, and it is legal. It's legal. This is what they're going to do to all the humans on the face of this planet. It's all legal. And then they talk about how the use of frequencies will be used in warfare. And we know, for example, the smart meters that are being deployed around the globe, the replacement of our electric meters, which will also and does include the replacement of all of our gas meters and our water meters as well, and will be connected to our food supply when they collapse the currency and they issue energy allowances, and that will all be controlled through the metering system. But they talk about the use of low frequencies, microwave frequencies, and they mention in this NASA document the U.S. Army report. The U.S. Army report is on our website, smartmetersmurder.com. It's about a 20-page Army document that talks about the use of frequencies to target the enemy. We're the enemy. And they say 100% of the human population will be affected by these frequencies. Some will be the canaries in the coal mine, which is a term that they've been using as people have been dropping like flies. People are experiencing all kinds of health maladies. Generally, it starts with ringing of the ears, heart palpitations, skin rashes, inability to sleep through the night. And what they're doing is they're jamming our immune systems with these frequencies.
So how do the elite shield themselves from their own weapons?
Well, that's a really good question. And some of the information that we've come across is, of course, they have methods far ahead of anything that we have available to ourselves, such as cancer cures. They don't get cancer. There's chip mechanisms that we understand can fend off certain frequency attacks. We also know that they're interested in transhumanism. So much of what they're doing globally, they're interested in. And to what extent they're affected by all of the chemtrails and all of the nanofibers that are being dropped, which is phase one of the first protocol, it all lines up. Everything lines up. You connect the dots. You see the NASA war document. Not only does it talk about the effects of frequencies and how it will be used, they acknowledge that it will interfere with our performance, that it will cause seizures. They acknowledge this in this document. It is no longer a debate about smart meters. We don't need any more scientists or doctors saying people are getting sick. This is the intention. So we have to stop looking at for more verifiable proof that people are becoming sick. This is the goal. This is the absolute goal. It's incarceration, it is enslavement, and it is depopulation, and it is massive mind control. The frequencies have multiple purposes.
What do you think the solution is to all of this? This
multi-level attack that's been going on for a very long time?
Well, I think the solution is that people need to become educated as rapidly as possible. And there are documents that are, for example, the Silent Weapons Quiet Wars document. It's a 41-page document. It's on our website. This lays out, it's an operations research and technical manual. This document was the 1954 built a 1954 Bilderberg policy at the first Bilderberg meeting, and this laid out the strategy to control the human population. And again, I can't stress enough that everyone should read this, because they talk about how they talk about that this document should not be released to the people because it is a declaration of war.
You can't keep fighting fires. You have to go after the arsonists. And that's what you're pointing out, is the people that are responsible. And everything we see out there, what they're spraying and why are they spraying, nobody's talking about the conspiracy itself. This is a war against the people, and this you've got a hold of those specific people, and that's why that's valuable. They're killing us.
That's exactly right. And this is their war plan. This is the war plan. So we have to go to the war plan. This is only 41 pages. You take out the diagrams, and you've got 36 pages. And it's not hard to read. They say that it's the silent weapon technology has evolved from operations research, a strategic and tactical developed under the military management in England during World War II. The original purpose of this research was to study strategic and tactical problems of air and land defense with objective effectiveness used in initiated military resources against foreign enemies. And they go on to talk about how they came across technologies that they had. Oh, in 1952, the grant period terminated, and the high-level meeting of the elite was held to determine the next phase of the social operations research. The Harvard project had been very fruitful, as is borne out by the publication of some of the results in 1953. Suggesting the feasibility of economic engineering, studies of structure of the American economy. And they talk about how it was engineered in the last half of the 1940s. The new quiet war machine stood, so to speak, in sparkling gold-plated hardware on the showroom floor by 1954. So this document talks about a combination of irresistible attacks upon humanity and how they will control humanity. Politically, they talk about how they set up the political system, right and left, so that we would feel our grievances were aired and our frustrations could come out. But the bankers were behind everyone who was elected, and they laugh at us. They laugh at us. The very, very last, and I'll go to this right now because we'll come back to the document itself, but the very last statement in this document, it says, factor six, cattle. Those who will not use their brains are no better off than those who have no brains. And so this mindless school of jellyfish, father, mother, son, and daughter, become useful beasts of burden, or trainers of the same. So what they say in this document is they will dole out poisonous foods. It's not what we need, but it's what we want, and those that decide to eat these foods will have the consequences of that. They tell us how they set up all the social engineering, how they devise the family, how they crumble the family, how they set up the war machine, how they influence thinking in the family unit to allow the family to give up their children to war for a rich man's fodder. It's a document that discusses the artificial womb. They believe that people need to feel protected, and that the elites are going to serve as the womb for protection of the people, that they'll have a place to take cover and hide from the reality of life, because we just are not capable of managing the reality of life. So they will set up that artificial womb. It says, the objective of these artificial wombs is to provide a stable environment for both stable and unstable activity, to provide a shelter for the evolutionary process of growth and maturity. Survival, to provide security for freedom and to provide defensive protection for offensive activity. And they say that from the time a person leaves its mother's womb, its every effort is directed towards building, maintaining, and withdrawing into artificial wombs various sorts of substitute protective devices or shells. So they set themselves up to protect us, to keep us crippled, to numb us down with foods so that our pineal gland is interfered with. We're never able to reach our higher consciousness. And right now, the massive fluoridation across the United States is to collapse the ability for us to think. They're shutting us down right now.
Take your baby and make it Rosemary's baby.
That's exactly right. Exactly right.
It's very similar to The Matrix, which was based on a DARPA document. I mean, it's similar, isn't it? It's problem, reaction, solution, the same way they always operate. So I guess the best thing to do is wake everyone up and hope that a grassroots movement can change it. Do you think revolution would be necessary at some point, or could it change without that? What do you think?
Well, I think we need a revelation, not a revolution. A revolution would only bring in martial law, in the opinion of what we are looking at, would bring in martial law. It would also allow people to be targeted with the weaponry that they cannot wait to roll out on us. You add the drones, you add the microdust, you add in the beam weapons that they tell us they have. They also have a blast wave accelerator. And when you look at the population of the United States, the majority of the population lives along the coastlines. And the blast wave accelerator was a tidal wave invention that the United States dreamt up with the Soviet Union back in the 40s. Actually, it was going to be used in World War II instead of the bombs, but they decided to use the bombs instead. And the blast wave accelerator exploits the methane deposits on the seabed and causes a fingerprintless, plumeless tidal wave on low-lying areas around the perimeter of any country.
You've got your weaponized Gestapo meter that keeps track of every house and every movement and every bit of energy that you're already doing and can report back to whoever is observing. So we're virtually in a concentration camp right now.
Yep.
In the meantime, the food supplies are being reduced, as you're mentioning in your other interview, how the dams are being taken out and the food. I mean, it's so obvious that the federal government coming in and wanting your child, even at earlier and earlier ages, every place, everywhere, and it's based on the foundation of climate change, which you mentioned you might want to get into that and your Iron Mountain.
That's absolutely true. All the documents, the Iron Mountain document, even the NASA war document, talks about there are too many people using too much stuff, and the Earth cannot support this. And they've come up with the fear-based scientific fraudulent information that people are now accepting. They're rewriting history and they're rewriting science with the idea that people are using too much resources. We have to reduce CO2 and reduce our greenhouse gas emissions. And that is flying through every city across the world right now. It's written into all local government documents, and cities now are, California, for example, with the CARB initiative, where we have to actually pay for the air we breathe and we're taxed for the air. It's like the fiat money. We've accepted false-backed money which they tell us in the Iron document or in the Silent Weapons document, one of the reasons that they send our men and women off to war is to reduce the population because they have stolen from them. They've taken real labor service in exchange for illegitimate false fiat money. So they have to eliminate the creditors. That's another aspect of war, is to reduce the creditors. But it's all based on the false pollution that is not false. They've created the pollution. When you look at the Iron Mountain document, you will see the methods in which they were going to create pollution. They even say that they will deforest us, and they're doing that with the chemtrail, the secret chemtrail or geoengineering program or weather modification. Actually, that program has multiple layers. Not only does it increase weather events, we've just experienced some horrific events here in the United States with massive tornadoes that just destroyed a number of cities in Oklahoma. We're being hit globally. They're hitting our food supply. It does reduce our food supply. It will increase the cost of our food. It's changing the pH in the soil, which will then fit to the prescribed Monsanto mega corporation food takeover of the globe. That is the intention of Monsanto, is global food domination. They have the seeds. The seeds will grow in the polluted soil that they are creating. This is all by design. So what do we do about this, you asked? We first must become educated. And I would say that the quickest way for people to become educated is look at these very simple source documents. Look at the Quiet Weapons Silent War document. Look at the Iron Mountain document and the New World Order Exposed 1969. They're all on our website, stopthecrime.net. Of all the research we have done, if you just get those basic documents understood, if everyone understands the fraud, then we will be able to eliminate this. We don't have to go on with this fraud. We do not. And people keep saying, well, there's more of us than them. Well, that may be true. But sadly, now, there are technologies that are so unbelievable that people won't even realize what hit them. And that is the strategy of the future wars and the wars that we're facing in our country. But I would say everyone needs to look at the NASA document. You need to move from the illusion, the non-reality that you are living in. You need to move into a new reality formed by the truth that these documents convey. So that then from those realities, then you can look at solutions. You can't shoot from the hip and look for solutions if you have not learned who's doing this to us, how they're doing this to us, and the documents that tell us how they are doing this to us.
The Truman Show, which was designed to create a false reality for entertainment, the false reality we have now is designed to kill us. This is a war against the people. This is why that tabloid came out, Prepare to Die. And they're doing it in so many deliberate ways in which those documents show that it's been in the works for a long time. And you not only see the individuals, which can be kind of identified with the Bilderbergers, the Trilats, and Skull and Bones, they are in the saddle. They are the ones determining policy, the scientific advisor to the president, of the John P. Holdren, in charge of the chemtrails. We have MITRE with the former head of the CIA directing all these branches of government. We've got guys like Leon Panetta, which is the head of the CIA and the Department of Defense, moving our armies over to NATO and moving without a constitution. This is a direct war against us, and we see people dying like flies now. And like you said, it doesn't have fingerprints on it because of the methods that they're using, but it's as real as people getting strokes and cancer and autism and Alzheimer's. It's so clear. I mean, the stats, the mathematics prove the point. And so they have to know, people have to know what's going on and strategize to fight it. And they can, because the only way they're getting away with this is by the lies. And if you succumb to the mass media, the three networks, and the two wire services, you're never going to get out of it.
Well, it actually says in the document, in the NASA war document, that they will use mass media propaganda. That is prevalent.
CNN syndrome, is that?
Yeah, that's one of the things that they call it. But they're literally going through this document. Oh, they're going to also use explosive dust opportunities. They talk about how the dust will infiltrate deeply into buried and other such targets. They're saying in here, too, if you move, they can see you and you're dead. So the technology, sensors in everything. There is an amazing mission statement that I found on PSI technology out of the Carnegie Mellon Institute. And the mission statement stated that they were changing the global infrastructure to that of computers and technology, and that would include our entire structure, not only utilities, but civil, government policies. And what is also very interesting, we went to Al Gore's recent book review. He wrote a book called The Future. And he talks about how artificial intelligence is going to take over and that we're going to see changes within the United States that have not been seen in 500 years. And he talks about how it's just not efficient to continue with humans. The same thing. These all tie in. They all tie in. We have a think tank that is plotting and scheming against humanity because they believe that it's too frail. And they also talk about let me pause for a second here. Oh, they talk about the U.S. Brain Project, and it begun in the 90s. They say that it was funded by 16 organizations across five agencies. NIH, which of course is the National Health Institute, the Department of Defense, NASA, and the Department of Energy. And they talk about how they have over 10,000 individual presentations at annual meetings for the Society for Neuroscience. And essentially, they have redesigned humanity. And there is a fascinating life story of a fourth-generation clone called Michael Prince. And that is on our website under the NASA document link, and I urge everybody to listen to this interview with Michael Prince. He was killed in 2011, and he is a fourth-generation clone. The levels of technology, the length of time that they've had technologies are unbelievable. What they also say in the Iron Mountain documentary is that they will control the educational system, that they will replace the education system with computers. They're saying that in the NASA document, too. Everything will be telecommuting, teleshopping, teleentertainment, teletravel, teleeducation. This way they can rewrite history. Everything will be on Kindle. And it'll be very easy to change books, to change the language. Recently, I was listening to a weather report, and the reporter said it will be sunny tomorrow. But I'm calling sunshine now a soft sunshine because the sun doesn't shine like it used to. I mean, that is what I'm saying. The reporter didn't say that. But the reporter now is saying a soft sunshine. They're rewriting our definition of what a sunny day is supposed to look like because we're under the constant vellum of this secret, non-existent atmospheric poisoning of our skies. So they're rewriting our vocabulary. They're rewriting everything about us. And they're keeping us so sick from the fluoride, from the aspartame in the food, all of the dyes and chemicals on everything. I mean, even the receipts that we get from filling our cars with gas are poisonous. We shouldn't be touching them. And so we need to navigate. I say that life on a daily basis is like trying to walk through a landmine field. And if you get to the other side at the end of the day, you've made good choices, because they've certainly put and placed landmines in our lives.
Yeah, it's hard to avoid, really.
The impact that it's having on our lives. We should be sitting here right now having this conversation because of what has been orchestrated against us. Our futures are being determined for us. Our life spans are being decided upon.
It's fascinating information. So the best way to get access to all this is stopthecrime.net?
Stopthecrime.net. It links to our other websites as well, which is smartmetersmurder.com. We have invaluable YouTube videos up on smartmetersmurder.com. There's a series done by Barry, B-A-R-R-I-E, Trower, T-R-O-W-E-R, who is a scientist out of the UK, and talks about the weaponization of frequencies as it relates specifically to the wireless, and in particular, the fast deployment throughout America and other countries as well of the cell phone towers. They're erupting everywhere, and they're disguising them as trees. They're disguising them in church steeples. Even when you drive through the desert, they're disguised into yuccas, and that is a cell phone tower. They're also, this is very interesting, they're putting them in mobile oil signs in gas stations, so you don't even see them. Now, when you look, if you're really aware of spotting cell phone towers, my grandchildren can spot them a mile away. But you can go to shopping centers where they have landscaping and the uplights amongst the landscaping, and you'll see many uplight standards that are disguised cell phone towers. And you don't think of it. You're just thinking that it's lights within the parking lot, and they're actual cell phone towers.
And they're in church steeples as well, aren't they? Yeah.
Yes, they are. And they're paying schools to put them on their campuses. Right now, there's a newly discovered cancer cluster at San Diego State University, and there have been a number of students and faculty that have gotten brain tumors. So we are in a takedown of frequencies admitted by this document. We have the proof. We have the military, the agencies that admit to this. We don't need to prove the deaths on the campuses near towers, because it says towers will be used in this. On page 98, it says that towers will be used to emit frequencies. So, again, this is their document. This is what they tell us. On page 98, a typical scenario, takedown of the U.S. by 10 people and $10 million. Binary biologicals, imported vitamins and clothing, the food supply will be poisoned, terror attacks with vaccines and with viruses. They talk about our railroads will be attacked, selective anti-personnel with radiation frequencies, microwaves from the towers. The water supply will be contaminated via intercontinental unmanned vehicles accompanied by serious Psy War, and that's the CNN syndrome. So they're telling us here how easy it would be to take down the United States with these new technologies. We've got to expose this.
Thanks so much for all this information, Deborah Tavares, and we will check out your website and try to make this go viral and get it out there. Thanks a lot.
Thank you so much.
So there you have it. That was Deborah Tavares telling us about the new NASA document that's been uncovered. And I urge everybody to go back to Wise Women Media and look at the post for tonight's show, and I added a comment, and it includes a PDF URL, which will take you right to the PowerPoint presentation that you can read for yourself. I am going to close us out with a song by Feist, I Feel It All. I want to just remind you all to go to the website, hit us up at the GoFundMe link, and stay tuned next week, same time, 10 o'clock, Friday night. It will be July 5th for our next show, and we'll see you on the radio next week. Here's Feist taking us on out.